Yeah. There is your Tech of Yeah. Welcome to the jungle. I am Jim Rome, live in the Quicken Loan Studios. Quicken Loans apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. Cannot waste any time. Got a monster opening block about last night's game one, and I've got an interview coming up next segment, so I'm not going to waste time. Let me quickly set this thing up for you. Telephone number is 1-800-636-8686. Dial right now. Follow me on Twitter at Jim Rome. Email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. Nathan Shepard of the New York Jets. He's got an awesome story. Anxious to speak with him. I'll do that next segment. Ben Golliver later on this hour. So we are front loading. We'll go back to back. Michael Brockers of the LA Rams coming up next hour. So three interviews coming up in the first half of the program. You know, Friday is always a busy day. I've got the week that was. I've got the ATP. It is your last day to get your demands in. The balloting for the Radio Hall of Fame starts on Monday. The Box of Chaos is going to be opened up on Monday. Today is your last chance. So hit me up on Twitter at Jim Rome. Email me at Rome, R-O-M-E, at haveatake.com. Or just give us a call at 1-800-636-8686. Let's get right at it. There's no way for me to cover that entire game in the open, but I do want to set a few things up. In fact, let me start by asking you, how was your night? What did you get up to last night? And the reason I ask, I need to know whether or not you saw game one of the NBA Finals, or were you just not that into seeing these two teams play again? Were you sticking to your hot take and your lava that the Warriors are so bad for the NBA, that you've already seen this movie three times before, and that you had better things to do? That anything would be better than having to see Golden State and Cleveland run it back a fourth time? Because if you were spewing all that lava and you did find something else to do last night, then you missed one of the best things ever. One of the best things ever. J.R. Smith doing one of the most J.R. Smith things ever on the biggest stage imaginable and blowing a chance to steal a game, rip home court, and actually give his team a legitimate chance in the series. Instead, JR implodes, wasting one of the greatest nights ever by one of the game's best to ever do it. And instead of winning, they end up getting smacked in OT, 124-114. In other words, not bad for a game that all you lava aficionados swore that you would never ever watch. Not only was it not bad, it was absolutely incredible. There were so many different elements that I could do 6 hours of show on that game alone. I mean, that game was so good that LeBron showing up for the game in a suit with shorts, Angus Young style, was forgotten by the time the game was over. An incredible look, by the way. An amazing look. JaVale McGee, as an example, comes out of nowhere. He was an absolute monster in the third quarter, guarding everybody on the floor, wreaking havoc, and even he was an afterthought by the time that game was over. Because the fourth quarter was one for the ages. It was so good. There are a couple of things that I'm going to have to put a pin in and just get back to them later on. You know, like the play of one Earl Joseph J.R. Smith III. The play of LeBron Raymond James Sr. Both so epic, they get their own takes. I mean, I can't even cover the whole game in this take. I can't get to Klay Thompson looking like he had his legs snapped off by J.R. Smith in the first quarter and then coming back to play 45 minutes and score 24. I don't even have time to discuss Steph Curry's epic shot at the end of the first half. And I can't get into the fact that JaVale legitimately was a massive force in that third quarter. Even skipping over all that, I still have no space right here to lay out that Larry Nance Jr. was huge for Cleveland. Or that Twitter roasted Jordan Clarkson again. Or that the Cavs played a nearly perfect game. That they were standing in the center of the ring, trading haymakers with the Warriors, and they were completely unafraid. I could spend an entire hour on the final minute of regulation alone. You've got LeBron's three-point play with 50.8 seconds left that gave them a 104-102 lead. You've got Kevin Durant going to respond, but being called for a charge on LeBron. Or was he? Well, he was, but then the officials met, they reviewed it, they changed it to a blocking foul. And on that point, I understand the explanation for why they were allowed to review it, because they thought LeBron might have had a foot in the restricted area, which he didn't. He was nowhere close. And I won't disagree with you if you want to argue that they ultimately got the call right and it should have been a blocking foul all along. All of that said, I completely understand why the Cavs were so pissed. I would have been too, because in the final minute of that game, you reviewed a call for a particular reason, and then you reversed the call for a completely different reason. I would have been pissed. I would have been raging. And apparently after the game, the Cavs were. Dave McMenamin tweeted, quote, "Four words I've heard more than once being muttered under Cleveland's personnel's breath in the Cavs postgame locker room, Ken Maurer bleeped us." Now, normally I would say that complaining about the refs is weak, but Ken Maurer bleeped us is a strong line. And I'm having a tough time disagreeing with that. I mean, it doesn't mean that there weren't other factors in the loss. I'll get to that. But trust me, the refs made sure that everybody knew that they were in that house last night.
Durant at the top of the key to the foul line. Down the lane, ran over to LeBron. And what do we have? It's an offensive foul. Ken Maurer took a lot of time making the call. He took a look out at Tony Brothers, who was near midcourt. It looked like Tony was going to make an indication. That's why Maurer hesitated. But LeBron James draws the foul. And now a discussion will take place on the replay.
Call on the floor has been overturned. Personal foul, LeBron James.
That stings. So now with 36 seconds remaining, it turns into a situation where with the original call, it had been Cavalier basketball. Now, however, Durant, with these 36 seconds remaining, has a chance to tie the ball game.
Cavs radio, notice how we picked up that exclusive audio. Did you hear LeBron's reaction when they reviewed it? Alvin, that is well done. You could hear the mics on the floor, and they ultimately pick up everything, right? Listen to LeBron's reaction when he heard that they reviewed it and then overruled it.
On the replay.
Call on the floor has been overturned.
Listen.
Personal foul. LeBron.
Wait for it.
Oh,
dude, he was mad. He was mad. Wouldn't we all react like that? I understand why he was pissed. Hey, Alvin. How pissed was he? Let me hear that one more time.
On the replay.
Call on the floor has been overturned. Personal foul, LeBron James.
Ah! Wow. LeBron did not like that at all. So that's Cavs radio. Then after the reversal, Durant makes both foul shots. The game is tied. LeBron scores again with 32.1 seconds left to retake that lead. Steph converts a three-point play to give Golden State a one-point lead again. And then that's when everything got nice. Really, really nice. I'm going to need to spend a whole take on what happened next in regulation. So let me mark that tape right there, and I'll come back to it. Because what I do want to do is skip ahead to something else. I want to skip forward to the end of overtime when this happened.
Livingston will fire with a shot clock winding down with a foul called, I think, on Tristan Thompson. Thompson went at Livingston taking the shot.
Did he just kick him out of the game?
Thompson might have got ejected. Now he and Draymond Green push and shove. And like we mentioned, there wasn't a lot of hostility here in the first 48 minutes. I think Tony Brothers just kicked out Tristan Thompson. If you thought that this one in round four was going to get a little friendlier, a little cooler, you thought wrong. The Warriors lead this game 122-114 with 2 seconds to go.
All hell breaks loose. Tristan Thompson gets a flagrant two. He is tossed. Everybody comes together. There's a scrum, and there's Draymond going Draymond, gleefully celebrating, looking to hook fools, which he did. Thompson then shoved the ball in Draymond's face. Afterwards, Thompson had this to say about what happened.
I mean, Sean's a smart player. He's been in the league for a long time. I played with Sean, so he knows. He knows, but he shot the shot. Maybe he wanted to increase his points per game. I don't know. That was some bullshit, but I just did a contest.
Actually, that wasn't. T, that wasn't. Look, I might agree with you if you said that the call was some bull bleep. But let's be very clear about this now. Shooting the ball before the shot clock expires is not bull bleep. If you want to make the argument that the call, the foul call, was bull bleep, I'll listen to that. But shooting the ball was not. Shooting the ball before the shot clock expires is literally what you are supposed to do. This is why it's called a shot clock. And when the shot clock is running, the rule is you have to shoot the ball before the shot clock expires. That's what Sean was doing. Now, I know you might think that he violated some code, but as Livingston explained after the game, the Warriors have their own code. And the code is they never give away a possession like that. They don't just dribble it out. They are not going to take the turnover. Now, you might, somebody else might, but they don't. They don't, and I've got no issue with that. I've got no problem with that. In fact, neither should you, Tristan. You should not have a problem with that, and neither should anybody else. Because they were not showing you up. That's what it comes down to. Did they show you up? Did they disrespect you? Did they rub it in your face? No, no, and no. Shooting a mid-range jumper is not rubbing it in. In fact, it's the opposite of rubbing it in. Now, if Sean Livingston had stepped back for a three, or if he drove to the bucket for a dunk, or if he threw up an alley-oop for somebody, then I'd get it. Then I'd be with you. That would be rubbing it in. But shooting a mid-range jumper before the shot clock expired is not rubbing it in. Now, let's break down that call itself. I'm not here to second-guess the refs, again. But I will say, I've got no problem if they just called a regular foul on Thompson instead of a flagrant two. Or even if they didn't bother calling anything at all. Like I said, if Thompson's problem was with the ref and not Livingston, I'm with him. Because there were 2.6 seconds left in overtime. The game was decided. Let it end. Don't drag it out. Do not create a situation for bad blood in game one of a series, which is exactly what they did. And that was only a small part of an epic game. And I haven't even touched on the moment that's going to be talked about and replayed for decades. JR going JR, which I will get to later on. I just want to make sure I set this whole thing up for you. Telephone number is toll-free, 1-800-636-8686. All right, something right here. Nathan Shepard was supposed to join me next segment. He is not going to. We'll find another spot for him on the program. But what that means to you is you can call right now. So if you were thinking about getting in early, but you heard that we were going back-to-back with the interviews, we are not. I have an open segment coming up next. Start dialing, 1-800-636-8686. Notice the two things that I didn't lay out in the open, really. JR going JR at the end of regulation and then lying about it, allegedly. LeBron. LeBron. How pissed do you think LeBron is? If I had to guess, Alvin, LeBron's reaction to what happened last night. This guy's one of the greatest games in NBA final history, and what's he got to show for it? Nothing at all. I wasn't inside the locker room, but I bet it sounded like this. Gotta feel badly for that guy. He got those slugs on his back, dragged them up and down the floor once again, all the way into OT. Did what he had to do to shock the Warriors. Rip game one, steal the home court, put them in a position to actually compete and contend, and then JR went JR. That gets its own take, which I'll have later on. Draymond goes Draymond. He may get his own take a little bit later on. Today is the last day for the Box of Chaos. Hit us up. Let's check out Twitter quickly. At John R. Reeve, first tweet on a Friday, he asks, why is everyone killing J.R. Smith? Get off his back. If you want to point the finger and blame someone, blame LeBron. He only scored 51. Phil tweets, how jealous was Pete Carroll of the way JR closed out that game. In my two cents worth tweets, after watching LeBron this playoff so far and last night, I am now a believer. I believe he can't win this playoff by himself. Yet LeBron can deal with four All-Stars and a couple of Hall of Famers, but not one JR Smith. This guy's amazing. I mean, come on. Even for him, that is unfathomable. Who would have ever thought that him throwing a bowl of soup and an assistant coach would not be the most brain-dead thing he did this year. Dear Rome, LeBron freaking James is a damn robot. 51 points in 48 freaking minutes. I can't even process what I'm watching anymore, but I freaking love it, win or lose. Signed, Aaron in Omaha. Warn me, striving for greatness out here, cuz. After that performance.
Greatness out here, cuz.
War of the League, retroactively giving LeBron the two finals MVPs he deserves, just like that bogus retroactive block call last night. All right, so what do you make of that call? What do you make of that call? Did LeBron not have position? Was LeBron not squared up? Was it the right call, and should it have been made originally, or did they get screwed? Dear Jim, J.R. Smith cost the Cavs the game by making the worst blunder in the history of sports. Therefore, J.R. should not be the dominant topic on every sports show today. He should be the only topic. Signed, George Hill. Denlesk's highly situationally aware clone. Wore the next email you read being even lamer than this one. Maybe, but we'll find out. It's so true. George Hill would be getting so much heat right now. He would be getting so much heat right now if not for JR for missing that free throw. And I'll tell you who else would be. KD. Kevin Durant getting boxed out. How does he not box out JR? How does he let JR get that rebound? And the most amazing thing of all to me, JR Smith, who never stops shooting, who always shoots when his teammates don't want him to. The one time they need this guy to shoot, he does not shoot the ball. How does he not go right back up with it? JR doing JR things at the worst possible time. Dear Rome, when I get the ball, the score was tied. So by my calculation, we were up by one. Signed, JR Hawk. Stephen PHX. War NBA coaches having to remind their players to glance at the score every once in a while. And finally, it's Friday in the jungle, so drop the deck of yeah. Spend the first segment talking about game one, then dedicate the rest of the show to what the people want, the box of chaos. Don't mention National Donut Day. Don't discuss the Stanley Cup Final. Today, let's discuss the clone's wishes, hopes, and dreams. You already got my vote, legend. War Lady Clones. It's my gal, Tracy. What's up, T? What's up, Trace? Hey, I'm all for it. If you want to spend the rest of the day talking about your demands, I'm here to hear them. I'm here to hear them because it is your last day. Get them in. Old Hawk went out, got himself a little box, painted it up, sanded it down, hit it with some paint, and now we've got the box of chaos. Last chance to get your demands in. So I'm running through that first take as quickly as I can to make room for an interview that is no longer in that spot. Good news for you. You can have that spot. 1-800-636-8686. Ben Golliver at 40 past. Michael Brockers next hour. Nathan Shepard, hopefully sometime later on today. Getting maximum performance out of anything depends on what you put into it. If you want to achieve maximum performance at work, you put in the extra effort. When you want max performance from your kids, you put in the time and the tools. And when you want maximum performance from your vehicle, you drop in Castrol Edge. It is the titanium strong motor oil. Here's the thing. Modern engines are smaller, but they're more powerful. They operate at higher pressures than ever before. High engine pressure causes significant stress on the oil, so the oil needs to be strong and it has to stay strong. Castrol Edge is formulated with the fluid titanium technology that I mentioned. It works to reduce friction and maximize engine performance. It's all very high tech. Castrol Edge is also 3 times stronger than the leading full synthetic against viscosity breakdown. Once again, this is documented. It was tested in the Kurt Orban test in the 5W30 VisGrade. If Orban says it's so, it is. Put it into your vehicle today. Castrol Edge.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Nathan Shepard of the Jets, who's got an amazing story. Really, really good story. The Jets are in meetings, which are running long, so we're going to try and reset him for hour number two. Ben Golliver is coming up in about 15 minutes. L.A. Rams defensive tackle Michael Brocker is already set for hour number two. Dudes, if you're ready to reduce the gray in your hair, go with the smartest product available, Experience Control GX from Just for Men. It's the first shampoo of the brain. Now, what makes it so smart? It reduces gray the same way that gray grows in, gradually. The more you shampoo with Control GX, the less gray you have. Just use it until you like what you see. Very, very smart, right? Smart enough, in fact, to be voted Men's Hair Care Product of the Year. Gradually reduce gray with the first shampoo with a brain. Find Control GX in the shave aisle. Smart shampoo. I like my shampoo to be smart. The smartest shampoo, in fact. Control GX from Just for Men. All right, this email says, LeBron, just a couple, please.
Yvonne, just a couple, please.
Hold up now, Alvy. LeBron, just a couple, please. Signed, Pant Legs.
Yvonne, just a couple, please.
Jay Stu, back when he acted regularly in movies. LeBron, just a couple, please.
Yvonne, just a couple, please.
An amazing look. A suit with shorts. It takes a certain kind of dude to pull something like that off. And he did. He could. Signed, Peter in Calgary. Wore Javier's Las Vegas. I have been to Javier's Las Vegas. It's good. In fact, I've been to all the Javier's, believe it or not, except for the one in L.A. And they're all good. I've been to the one in Mexico. Javier's in San Jose, Mexico. Love it. Right on the beach. Javier's Crystal Cove, right across the street from the beach. Javier's Irvine Spectrum, awesome. Javi's in John Wayne Airport. That's how badass Javier is. He's in the airport. Last day for the Box of Chaos. I got to physically bring the box in here so you see what it looks like. In fact, why don't we just get a look at the box right now, Hawk, if you don't mind. I need more time to lay out the take because it's a very short segment. But check out Hawk running down the hallway. Dude, your PT guy or your PT is not going to like you running in the hallway unless you're running to get that foam roller so you can lay out and foam yourself. And there he is. Boy, that is one ugly-ass shirt. And the box does not look much better. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, there it is. There's Hawk. Hawk is leaving, and there's the box. The Box of Chaos. If you're watching on CBS Sports Network, all of your demands are going into that box. We will open up the box on Monday. I'm going to pull five of your demands out of that. And keep in mind, I need reasonable demands. I'll put myself out there. I'll do things that I don't want to do. I'll do things that I'm not comfortable doing. I'll ask others to do things that they don't want to do and that are not comfortable doing. But it's got to be reasonable. It has to be reasonable. As an example, a lot of you want Janet to co-host a segment with me. She's already on record as saying no. I'm going to tell her she has to do it. So that's something that she does not want to do. That's something that she would not be comfortable doing. I'm fine with that because she asks me to do things all the time that I'm not comfortable doing that I don't want to do, and I just do. I'll cash that chip. So keep that in mind. Today is the last day, though. Hit me up right now, either on Twitter or on email or even on the phones. What is your demand? Let's go to Sacktown very quickly. Dom. Actually, no time, right? Now, what the hell? Sacktown. Dom, you made it in. What's up? Good morning.
Morning, Jim. Hey, I think you should get a henna tramp stamp that says property of Janet. you will definitely get my vote. War, LeBron coming to Sacktown next year. And War, my pick getting me a golden ticket into the smack-off. Thanks, Jim.
All right, Dom, you got it, bud. Three things that will never happen. You getting a golden ticket, LeBron going to Sacktown, and me getting a property of Janet henna tramp stamp. The three things that you want worse than anything else, and none of them are going to happen. I just said a reasonable request. A henna tramp stamp. Hey, why not just get it on my face? Why not get a real tattoo and get it on my face? No, that's not going to happen. It has to be a reasonable request. That to me is not reasonable. Nor is it reasonable to think that LeBron would come to Sacramento. Nor is it reasonable to think that somebody who makes that call is going to get a golden ticket. Bro, I appreciate you. Thanks for listening. Call anytime you want, but that's not going in the box. Hawk, where'd you get this thing?
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Tiger is back. He joins many of the world's best, including Dustin Johnson, Jason Day, Ricky Fowler, Rory McIlroy, and Justin Thomas, as Jack Nicklaus hosts the Memorial Tournament presented by Nationwide this weekend on CBS. Look for that. As promised, we're joined right now by somebody who covers the NBA for SI.com. Also the host of the Open Floor podcast. He is a jungle legend. He joins us to break down a wild game one last night. Ben Golliver is my guest. Ben, it's great to have you back. How are you?
I'm really good, Jim. Where do we even start with last night's game?
Man, that's the truth, Ben. That's exactly what I was talking about when I started the program. Where do you start, and how do we get it all in? Listen, Ben, you've been in my studio. You've covered the Smack Off, so that means you've seen some pretty wild things in your life. Have you ever seen anything as crazy, though, as game one of the NBA Finals last night? Why don't we start right there?
No, it's way, way up there in terms of just the, you know, the storylines. I mean, whether it's the overturned call, whether it's J.R. Smith's elementary school mistake, you know, late in the game, not knowing the time score situation, you just go right down the list. I mean, I can understand why, you know, Cleveland fans and, you know, Cleveland's players in the locker room, frankly, walked away from that game just really chapped, you know, and that was their opportunity. They come into this series as basically the biggest underdog in more than a decade, right? And they're looking for any way to generate positive momentum. And you look at LeBron's individual performance. I mean, the most points he's ever scored in a playoff game in his career, 51 points, the first 50-point game in the finals since Michael Jordan in 1993. And it all goes to waste because of an overturned call that, you know, no one's really ever seen on that block charge. And then the J.R. Smith, you know, brain fart where, you know, he's dribbling to nowhere as the clock expires at the end of regulation. That is truly crazy.
Ben Golliver joining us. You know, I want to ask you about both those things in a minute, but why don't you stay on LeBron James? I mean, at this point, Ben, nothing this guy does should surprise us or impress us anymore, but how impressed were you with 51 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists against a team that knows him as well as Golden State does?
No, it's getting so difficult to even rank his great moments. I mean, look at his postseason. It's like 40-point game night after night, triple-doubles night after night, game winners against virtually everyone, and then he puts up this 51-point performance. What I did think was a takeaway from game one, though, Golden State really missed Andre Iguodala. We've seen in these previous finals series, you know, dating back to 2015, that nobody makes LeBron work, you know, as much as like a Kawhi Leonard as Andre Iguodala does. And when he's out there, you know, just sort of surveying the defense, being able to look over the top of a Steph Curry, or even when he's matched up with Draymond or Kevin Durant, he's still able to get exactly where he wanted. And I guess the biggest surprise from that game, you know, in game one might have been that LeBron didn't go into hero ball mode down the stretch. I mean, he had the opportunity there, you know, even before, you know, J.R. Smith's rebound to essentially decide the game, you know, try to take his own shot, to put his own stamp on it. And instead, he elected to pass the ball to George Hill. It sort of speaks to LeBron's just unbelievable basketball IQ. It was a great pass to Hill. He was cutting wide open to the basket. So it shows you how he's wired. He always has had that Magic Johnson streak to him, and not just Ben Michael Jordan. But you do wonder, looking back, if LeBron could do it over, would he have just held the ball? Would he have tried to get his own shot? Would he have tried to go for the knockout blow there at the end of regulation? I kind of wonder if he regrets that sequence.
Ben Golliver joining us. You know, it speaks to his IQ, which is just off the charts. It also, to me, speaks to his patience and the fact that, incredibly enough, he still has confidence, well, at least in that moment, still has confidence with the guys he runs with. Ben, so let's get to the two key points. What do you make of the referees reviewing the charge on Kevin Durant and then flipping that into a blocking foul on LeBron?
That's like the worst possible situation for the NBA on that call, because to me, they got it right in the end, but the process was so convoluted and it will just leave everyone upset. You know, to me, LeBron was still moving, and he argued pretty passionately after the game that he was set. He saw the play develop. He believed he had, you know, taken the charge on Kevin Durant. But when I looked at it, I saw him just drifting to the left a little bit. He wasn't totally set. And to me, the right call in the end was the one that they eventually made. But the reason why it gets so complicated and so confusing is, you know, under the NBA's rules, they're not really supposed to be able to review it like they did. I mean, the only way they can review that call is if he's outside of that, you know, charge circle. I guess they can review it if he's close. And I guess Cleveland's point was LeBron was nowhere close to the circle, you know, the protected circle under the hoop. You know, he was sort of well outside that distance, so therefore they shouldn't be able to review it. And I can completely understand their viewpoint on that because it wasn't close. I mean, he was way outside, and it kind of seemed like they used the review as a crutch to sort of look at a close call, and that's not how you're supposed to be able to use it. So that's going to be one that, really irritates them. And, you know, J.R. Smith said it himself in his post-game comments, that that call, that overturned call, got to Cleveland. It got in their head. They were thinking about it. And I think that played a factor, you know, in their meltdown there in overtime as well. I mean, it's really hard to take, you know, a situation where you feel aggrieved by the officials, and then you have a brain fart like J.R. Smith did and come back from that mentally. And to me, it was no surprise when Golden State went on that 9-0 run to open overtime, because that's just so hard to bounce back from mentally.
Ben Galver joining us. You're right, Ben, and JR's right. That call did get to them, but not nearly as much as JR not knowing the scoring situation at the end of regulation got to them. I mean, so when you see him get that rebound at the end of regulation and then do what he did, dribble out the clock, what's going through your mind when you see JR go JR at the worst possible time?
Yeah, you know, four words are going through my mind: time and score situations. I mean, basketball coaches across the country, I'm sure, are just, you know, telling that to their players, you know, today. Like, it's the same thing you preach to people since, you know, grade school. Since as soon as you teach them what a legal dribble or a proper shooting motion, I mean, it's 101 stuff. You have to know the time and score in late game situation, or really bad things can happen. And it was one of those situations where it really reminded me of, like, the all-time great sports blunders, you know, whether the infield hit is kind of going through an infielder's legs, or whether a punter is kind of rolling out to nowhere and he's about to get decked and fumble the ball in the open field, whether it's Chris Webber, you know, calling timeout when he doesn't have one. Because as it was happening in the arena, it just unfolded in slow motion. It's like, what is he doing? And then simultaneously, the rest of the arena realizes, oh, he thinks his team is leading, and the last guy to figure it out is J.R. Smith. And unfortunately, he figured it out when it was too late, after the buzzer had already sounded. And, you know, that's a tough situation to be in. I mean, he's obviously had some miscues earlier in his career where, you know, he's taking shots with, you know, certain time left on the clock where maybe he shouldn't be shooting it because he's just, you know, not aware of the moment. I like how the Cavaliers tried to handle the situation after the game, though. You know, Ty Lue obviously wanted to sort of shift the focus towards the referees on the call. LeBron James says, you know, I would never, you know, kind of throw JR under the bus. I'm going to stay with him. But the unbelievable frustration really came through if you watch the replay. You know, LeBron just cannot believe what JR had done. If you look on the weak side of the court, guys like Tristan Thompson and Jeff Green, they've got their palms raised to the sky. They're like, what is this guy doing? And it's just, you don't see that in this kind of a high-pressure moment in the NBA Finals very often.
Look, LeBron may not throw him under the bus, but I've got no problem doing it. And I agree with you, Ben. I love the way that Ty Lue and LeBron responded, but not the way JR responded. I mean, what do you make of JR appearing to say to LeBron right after it happened that he thought that they were ahead, and then after the game claiming that he knew the game was tied?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, is this a tactic, Jim? We see people, like, put out the alternative facts these days, right? You know, you just kind of throw out multiple different stories to try to confuse people and deflect the blame. I don't really know what he was talking about, because the video clearly said, you know, showed right afterwards that he said, you know, I thought we were up one. Ty Lue comes out to the media and, you know, tells us in the podium that J.R. Smith just thought that they were leading. And then, you know, he gets to the locker room and he's facing all the cameras, and he had a different story where he's trying to explain how he thought the game was tied and he thought his teammates would call timeout. And, you know, he was, you know, trying to pass the ball because, you know, he just, you know, was essentially just trying to extend the game. And, you know, none of it really made sense. And, you know, I think for him, that's going to be a really, really hard mental battle to bounce back from. I mean, we've seen him be very streaky, you know, at times, be a huge X factor for Cleveland, you know, even going back to their title in 2016. But we've also seen him go through these crazy shooting ruts where, you know, he might miss like 7 or 8 3-pointers in a game. And, you know, he's sort of been an X factor for them really for their entire run here recently in Cleveland. So not only do the Cavaliers as a team need to bounce back from this mistake, but J.R. Smith individually really needs to bounce back from this mistake. And you can imagine what's going through his head here over the next 48 hours. I mean, that is a really, really tough situation to be in, and I would not wish that on my own worst enemy.
Ben Galver joining us. Ben, let me get your thoughts on Sean Livingston and Tristan Thompson. Now, Livingston explained afterwards that that jumper that he took as the shot clock was running down at the end of overtime was not rubbing it in, but rather it's part of the Warriors' belief that you never give up a possession like that. You don't accept the turnover. Thompson, of course, did not see it that way. What do you make of how that played out?
Look, the Warriors run up the score a lot. This was not one of those cases. This is game one of the finals, hard fought, that was in overtime, and there was still time left on the clock. I mean, to me, you know, Tristan Thompson, again, was just frustrated by what had been a terrible back-to-back sequence there with the, you know, the foul call earlier and then J.R. Smith's mistake. I mean, Cleveland just sort of couldn't believe what had happened to it there in the moment. And I think that's why he was frustrated. I mean, there was nothing wrong with Livingston's shot, you know, sort of by basketball etiquette rules. Cleveland was still playing defense basically on that play. And everything that happened after that, to me, was completely unnecessary. It was kind of funny. I mean, it felt like J.R. Smith lost his mind and then everybody else on the court lost their minds. I mean, LeBron and Steph are going back and forth. You know, Draymond sort of prancing all over the place and, you know, kind of, you know, revving up the crowd and getting into Tristan Thompson's face. Thompson shoves him for no reason, gets himself ejected. I mean, the whole game just sort of came apart at the seams after that. But I think Livingston was in the clear. You know, I had no issue with that. And I do think, though, Golden State is starting to sort of cultivate this reputation. And maybe they've already done it here for these last couple of years. You know, you look at those shimmies by Steph Curry when they're, you know, in competitive games. The game's not over, and he's sort of celebrating like that. You look at Draymond's antics, how excited he gets, you know, the flexing and all that. I think there is a reputation of sort of arrogance and, you know, they think sort of holier-than-thou attitude emanating out of Golden State that sort of rubs people the wrong way, Jim. And I think this is one more example of that, where a team like Cleveland just says, hey, you know, you guys are beating us. You don't need to go above and beyond. And I thought Thompson overreacted, but I can also see where they're coming from.
Ben Culver joining us. Let's not also forget Draymond taunting Kendrick Perkins with the pom-poms, which I thought was absolutely amazing. All right, so, Ben, where does that leave us from the next game? I mean, with that flagrant two, is Thompson – I mean, is there any chance he gets suspended for game two? And what about Kevin Love for leaving the bench?
Well, look, if there was ever a situation for the NBA to just sweep it under the rug, wouldn't this be it? I mean,
yes.
You have this crazy controversial overturn call where Cleveland's, you know, clearly feeling jobbed by it. I mean, you know, Ty Lue used the phrase robbed. I mean, you don't hear that very often, and that could wind up getting him fined. I wouldn't be surprised on that. But I think this is one where you've got to let those guys play. And, you know, it's for the good of the game. You know, you want a competitive game. I think if you take either Thompson or Love away from Cleveland, that's a much tougher matchup for them in game two. And so if I were them, I would just, you know, kind of let it pass and move forward and run it back for game two.
Hopefully so. Ben, one last thought. What do you make of Kevin Durant? He did not have an especially good shooting game last night. So overall, what kind of thoughts do you have as you watch him and then about Golden State's offense overall right now?
Well, to be honest, I feel like I'm the last Kevin Durant defender alive, Jim, because you know there's still even frustration in his home building in Oracle Arena where he's taking some of these tough twos and the crowd seems like on the edge of sort of booing some of his shot selection. I mean, the guy still put up, you know, a monster stat line, you know, 20-plus points, I think 9 rebounds, 6 assists, something like that. I mean, I think he is held to such a high standard, and because he's not Steph Curry and because he's not LeBron James, you know, clearly LeBron's the best player in the world, and clearly Steph Curry is the golden boy for their fan base. So KD's sort of in this situation where, you know, when he plays well, he's sort of taken for granted, and when he plays poorly, he winds up getting a lot of the blame, I think, not only from their fan base, but from outside observers who say, hey, you know, if KD's doing too much one-on-one stuff, you know, that takes Golden State away from what makes them best. And, you know, I think for Durant, he's been sensational, you know, throughout these playoffs. I mean, he really has been reliable. He doesn't score in the same way that Steph does in terms of those great bursts where, you know, Curry hits 3 straight threes and all of a sudden the game's over. KD is much more methodical and deliberate. He just brings it every single night. But what I would encourage people to do is just sort of, you know, take a palate cleanser on Kevin Durant. I know there's a lot of people who are still upset about his decision, you know, in free agency to go and join Golden State, and it sort of made it unfair. You know, Golden State's now this super team, but the guy plays some pretty incredible basketball, and if you get over some of the off-court stuff and just watch what he does on a night-to-night basis, this guy is playing great. He didn't have his best game in game one, no doubt about it. There was some questionable shots and things like that, but
right.
He is.
All right, then. Ben, got to jump in. End of the hour. Ben Golver, covering the NBA for SI.com, host of the Open Floor Podcast and Jungle Legend. Hey, Ben, sorry about that. Really good to have you back, Ben. Thanks so much. Have a great weekend. Let's do it again soon. Hour number two, straight ahead.